And good morning. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Wednesday, April 7th. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
The Boulder poverty rate for non-whites is double that of whites.
We're trying to do pretty much every type of outreach that we can think of.
I'm going to be seeking the truth about the election. Having Sidney Powell on my podcast full is an impediment.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's Morning Magazine and the Public Affairs Show. Stories coming up. Legislation aimed at reducing the Colorado jail population took up the bulk of the Boulder City Council meeting last night when more than 40 people unanimously voiced support for SB 2162 during the public hearing. That story ahead. The second round of Bedrooms Are for People is on a fast track to appear on Boulder's November ballot. More on that coming up. And then two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You with Chris Moore and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Following a commentary from Jim Hightower just after the BBC headlines at the bottom of the hour, a public affair will feature yesterday's Conference on World Affairs session entitled Fighting Falsehoods with Facts, Challenges of Objective Journalism, featuring three nationally known journalists. But first this morning, we'll start with a look at local and regional headlines. Here's KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
A new variant of COVID-19 has been detected for the first time in the state, with two individuals having confirmed cases in Boulder County. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said yesterday that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had notified state officials of the finding. CDPHE said in a news release that the individuals' travel histories are not known, and information about when they were tested or demographic data about them was not immediately available. Public health officials originally identified the P1 variant that was first found in Brazil. The Denver Post reports the variant pushed that country's health system to the breaking point and has proven adept at reinfecting people who already had the virus. To date, there have been 289 P1 cases detected in 25 jurisdictions in the U.S., including the two new ones in Boulder County. The State Health Department urged Coloradans to continue wearing masks and social distancing, which can reduce the spread of all known variants and are the best tools for preventing the spread, no matter the strain. Meanwhile, Boulder County Public Health reported an uptick in cases yesterday for those in young age groups up to 22 years old, while other age groups are steadily declining. The county said Tuesday there were 32 new coronavirus cases and 21 new hospitalizations, but no new deaths in over 3 weeks. Boulder City Council has declared March 22nd as a day of remembrance for the 10 people killed at the Boulder King Supers grocery store last month. Interim City Manager Chris Meskook provided a brief update to the council last night on what to expect going forward at the South Boulder site. He said at least one access point would soon be reopened, and plans are underway to create a short and long-term memorials there. After noting the atrocity that took 10 members of the community who were doing their jobs and feeding their families, Boulder Mayor Sam Weaver read the names of the 10 victims. Weaver said a modest and humble gesture of the city council in the city of Boulder declares that every year on March 22nd, it will be designated the Boulder Day of Remembrance. On that day, every year, the community will pause and remember the 10 people who departed and will celebrate their lives. And every year, their names will be said aloud so that they will live on in our hearts. Also last night, Boulder City Council passed a declaration of solidarity with the Asian American and Pacific Islander community in the wake of the March 16th murders in Atlanta and other acts of violence, including attacks on elders throughout the U.S. The Boulder County Board of Commissioners approved an agreement with other jurisdictions to fund the construction of trail crossings into the Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge. Commissioners voted 2-1 in favor with Matt Jones, the lone dissenter. The Daily Camera reports that the commissioners did not take any verbal public comments during a hearing before the vote. However, 180 pages of comments were received by mail. The crossings will be at Colorado Highway 128 and Indiana Street and into the Greenway at the refuge. There has been public opposition to the crossings because of the history and pollution of Rocky Flats. The area was open for public recreation 3 years ago after more than a decades-long cleanup that cost billions of dollars. The plant at Rocky Flats produced plutonium triggers for more than 30 years until 1989. 1,300 acres of the area remain off-limits as a Superfund site. Commissioner Jones said he knows the chance of getting cancer is low, but he wouldn't wish that on anyone. Commissioner Claire Levy said she understood concerns from the community, but thinks the crossings will make accessing Rocky Flats safer. She added that the refuge already has people on the trails, and for her, it's whether they get there safely or not. Colorado lawmakers this week began debating the state's $34 billion budget. The Colorado Sun reports that the legislature was able to reverse funding cuts made at the pandemic as the pandemic descended upon the state last year. Lawmakers now have hundreds of millions more to spend than they were anticipating because Colorado's economy fared better than expected during the pandemic. The budget includes spending of $3.8 billion more next fiscal year than in the last one, which ends this June 30th. Also at the legislature, a bill is being considered that would greatly restrict when prisoners could be placed in solitary confinement. The Denver Post reports that hundreds of people in county jails across the state spend 22 hours a day or more sitting alone in a small cell. The bill does not apply to all jail inmates and instead focuses only on juveniles, pregnant women, people with physical disabilities, and those with serious mental health diagnoses or symptoms. The restrictions also would only be for jails with more than 400 beds, according to Boulder Democratic Representative Judy Amabile, who is sponsoring the bill. Although Boulder County Sheriff Joe Pelley said at the hearing yesterday that the bill was too much too soon, it was voted out of committee and sent to the full House. The Denver School Board has hired an outside firm to do a thorough and independent fact-finding investigation into allegations against school board member Tay Anderson. Anderson has been accused of sexual assault and other inappropriate behavior. The organization Black Lives Matter 5280 issued a statement in late March saying a woman who told the group that Anderson sexually assaulted her. The statement said the woman wishes to remain anonymous. Black Lives Matter 5280 said the accusations have not gone through a formal legal process, but the group is committed to protecting, uplifting, and believing black women decidedly as it relates to sexual violence. Anderson, who is 22 years old, has denied the allegation repeatedly, saying that he has not sexually assaulted anyone and welcomes a full investigation. The National Weather Service says that skies will gradually clear today, becoming sunny with a high near 62 and breezy conditions. Tonight, the low will be about 39, and tomorrow, sunny skies with highs in the upper 60s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. More than three dozen speakers at a public hearing last night urged Boulder City Council to support a bill pending before the Colorado legislature aimed at reducing the Colorado jail population. Senate Bill 2162 was on the agenda as council took up state and federal policy matters and addressed its position. During a recent hearing at the Capitol, Boulder was the outlier in opposing the bill, with Police Chief Maris Harold leading the criticism.
Early last month, Chief Harold, along with a handful of Boulder residents, testified against SB 2162, a criminal justice reform bill that would end cash bail and arrests for low-level crimes. Harold cited a spike in crime in Boulder since the pandemic began and said it was the wrong time for such a bill. Back in Boulder, a subcommittee of the City Council met for an extensive conversation about the bill and adopted a position of amend. That allowed them to neither oppose or support the legislation, but favor amendments. Rebecca Wallace with the ACLU of Colorado questioned the logic of that position.
City Council's presentation suggests that it agrees with the sentiment behind this bill, but simultaneously, Council seeks to dramatically cut the bill's effectiveness through substantive amendments. Just want to clarify, because I have been working really closely on stakeholding with this bill for 8 months, and it's been primarily with law enforcement and crime survivors. Key stakeholders from months ago are Boulder Sheriff Joe Pelley and Boulder County DA Michael Dougherty, and neither of them are opposed to this bill. Sheriff Pelley has stated publicly and repeatedly that the bill largely mirrors the arrest standards in place in Boulder before the pandemic. Now, Chief Harold has informed this council otherwise, and the council seems to be taken by her views. But, you know, we remain confused as to why this would be persuasive, given that Chief Harold wasn't even in Boulder before the pandemic.
Chief Harold and downtown business owners have more than once testified at council meetings about increased property crime in the past year, but Curtis Hessel argued against equating jail depopulation and property crime.
Some members of this opposition fear scary statistics and reach for the simple callousness of lock 'em up logic. Others spin outright lies to protect the profits they reap from the pain of the jailed. The system they want to shore up is unjust. Cash bail criminalizes poverty, locking people in cages without a trial, simply because they cannot afford to post bail. Any legal system that values liberty should find such an arrangement odious.
Katie Dyer said minorities are more likely to have money bond set, more likely to face higher bond amounts, and more likely to be detained pre-trial.
Mass incarceration harms our most vulnerable communities. The Boulder poverty rate for non-whites is double that of whites. Black, Indigenous, and Latinx people are disproportionately policed and arrested compared to white people. People in jail are four times more likely to have disabilities, and more than half of the people in jail have psychiatric disabilities. These valuable people in our community need support and not jail.
Like several others, Colorado-based attorney and bail activist Elizabeth Epps was bewildered why a city that bills itself as progressive would oppose a modest criminal justice reform bill.
SB 62 balances the critical goals of pretrial liberty with community safety. Counselors, when we say community safety, that must include safety from police terror, safety from over-prosecution, safety that is the freedom to safely survive mental health and substance abuse challenges, not in unsafe cages. And SB 62 will help us do these things. Why is a woman from Denver testifying at Boulder City Council? Because, frankly, in the months of meaningful, deep work that has made this bill stronger work that has earned the support of true progressives across the state, there has been one city from which opposition has disproportionately emanated, Boulder, Colorado.
Nonetheless, council members Mark Wallach and Bob Yates were not persuaded.
I would have been a little bit more persuaded if I had heard these expressions of support from a number of downtown business owners who actually have experienced theft, break-ins, and damage to their businesses. I did not hear any of that.
I'm a little troubled by a state bill that tells home rule cities and police departments and city managers and city councils in the various cities throughout the state about how they enforce their laws. It seems to me we are a home rule city and we should be allowed to engage in law enforcement consistent with our community standards.
At the end of the discussion, six council members, Wallach, Yates, Junie Joseph, Mary Young, and Mayor Sam Weaver, maintained their support for the bill with possible amendments, while two expressed their full support of SB 2162. They were Adam Swetlick and Rachel Friend.
We are on the heels of a police officer laying down his life for our community just 2 weeks ago. So we're all, I think, on this council very grateful to our police department. So where I am coming from is an interest in improving the criminal justice system.
Despite small pockets of resistance to the bill, ACLU lobbyists believe it's likely to pass in the Colorado legislature.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at centennialpeaks.com.
Boulder's Bedrooms Are for People campaign took advantage of nice weather at last week's Boulder's Farmers Market to cross the halfway signature collection mark needed to place the measure on the 2021 ballot.
We're trying to do pretty much every type of outreach that we can think of.
That's Eric Budd, co-chair of Bedrooms Are for People, the group that hopes to reform Boulder's strict housing occupancy limit that prohibits more than three unrelated people from living together in the majority of Boulder homes. The same signature gathering campaign was started last spring, but after receiving inaccurate information from the city about deadlines and the number of signatures necessary, the measure did not make the ballot. Since then, Boulder has implemented a direct democracy online petitioning system for the collection of signatures. But that's not always easy. Since it was introduced, Bud says users attempting to sign via computer have received error messages or learned they can't sign because their voter registration does not include a phone number. If that's the case, it requires a signer to call the county clerk or go into the office to add a phone number in order to sign the petition.
That's one of the things that we find with the online system is that only about 20 or 30% of people can sign immediately on the spot based on how the system works. And so we try to do as much outreach as we can to try to help people either add a phone number or go through the steps that they need to finish signing.
I was one of the people who couldn't finish signing the petition at the farmer's market last Saturday. After jettisoning my landline several years ago, I was unaware my current cell phone number wasn't listed on my voter registration. That meant in order to sign electronically, I needed help walking through several steps on my cell phone, which Bud says is not uncommon.
There are different kind of groups of people who may have more challenges using the system than other people. Some people are able to finish signing in 2 to 3 minutes and they're totally done. And some people, I think, are not able to do that. So we kind of either walk them through email or text or even phone call sometimes. And sometimes it's really much easier for us to kind of walk through the online petition process in person. And also just one of the reasons we're going out in person is because we can just have so many more conversations with folks about our measure and also reach more people that we wouldn't necessarily reach digitally. You know, some people are very online and they see all of our advertisements and they will find us that way, but some people aren't. And so seeing people at the farmers market is a great way to just find more people to support our measure.
If successful, the Boulder initiative would be the first in the nation to secure municipal ballot access via an online petitioning system. Bud says Bedrooms Are for People has until June 4th to collect the necessary signatures to make the November ballot.
It's a little bit less than what we needed last year. The exact number is 3,336. And the good thing about the online system is that when someone signs the online system, their signature is validated immediately. And we can see that. So we can see an exact count of where we are versus if you're using paper petitions where you just have to kind of make some assumptions about how many of the signatures you're gathering are valid. And so last year, the number of valid signatures we got versus the total was about 65 to 70%, whereas all of the official signatures we are getting this year are already validated.
Bedrooms Are for People believes the city's zoning laws are exclusionary and unfairly force thousands of people to live illegally or move. Coincidentally, the Denver City Council on Monday passed a measure that now allows up to 5 adults to live together in households where not all residents are related.
And Bedrooms Are for People volunteers will be available outside of popular Boulder destinations throughout April and May to speak with voters about the proposed measure and help them use a phone, tablet, or computer to sign the online petition. Or if you want to tackle it on your own, go to bedroomsareforpeople.com/sign to sign the petition online now. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's 8:22, and time now for our regular Wednesday morning feature, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. I've been reading articles about how the crisis at the Mexican border is greatly hurting the Biden administration's credibility. There are 3 bills currently before Congress that are taking on parts of the immigration issue. Let's start with the DREAM Act of 2021, yet another attempt to make permanent Obama's executive order to allow Dreamers a way to stay in the U.S., which was canceled by Trump, rescued by the courts, and reauthorized as a temporary executive order by Joe Biden. This bill would stabilize the status of certain individuals who are long-term United States residents and who enter the U.S. as children. As long as the filibuster remains in place, there's almost zero chance of this passing. But you almost certainly know that young kids who came here with their parents and who have no memory of their home countries will continue to face eventual deportation unless this law is passed. The SECURE Act, Senate Bill 306, is a bill to provide a process for granting lawful permanent resident status to aliens from certain countries who meet specified eligibility requirements and for other purposes. Senator Van Hollen said, quote, "For decades, our country has welcomed and protected those fleeing violence and turmoil around the world. TPS recipients are members of our communities. They came here legally, and it is unsafe to return to their home countries. We have a moral obligation not to return people to their countries that will put them in harm's way, close quote. TPS is a temporary legal status granted to foreign citizens who are endangered by conditions in their home country, such as ongoing armed conflict, environmental disaster, epidemic, or other extraordinary events. Currently, there are approximately 411,000 people with TPS status in the U.S. from 10 designated countries: El Salvador, Haiti, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. But in September of 2020, a federal court of appeals ruled in favor of the Trump administration for termination of TPS designations for El Salvador, Haiti, Nicaragua, Sudan, Honduras, and Nepal. TPS recipients now face uncertainty as they wait the pending rehearing on their cases. The SECURE Act will provide stability for these individuals and their communities by giving them the ability to apply for legal permanent residency. Third, the Bipartisan Farm Workforce Modernization Act, first presented in the House by Representatives Zoe Lofgren, Democrat of California, and Representative Dan Newhouse, Republican of Washington, is also now in front of the Senate. It would legalize hundreds of thousands of farm workers now in the country illegally. They could qualify for five-year renewable visas, as well as options for permanent legal status, depending on how long they have been in the U.S. and how long they can verify that they have worked on farms. The bill would also overhaul the H-2A visa program for farm workers, providing dairy farmers and other producers the ability to bring in workers for three-year visas, assuring year-round labor needs are met. If you have ideas on the DREAM Act, the SECURE Act, and the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
8:26 and 38 degrees outside our Boulder studios. Now, let's join Brigitte Mars for advice about holistic nutrition and better living on this week's Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to share some holistic ideas on how we can cope with grief. It seems that grief is part of the human experience for most of us. When we lose something that maybe we took for granted, could be death, the ending of a relationship. But in any case, we know that when we grieve, our heart rate, blood pressure, and hydrochloric acid production rise. It's not unusual to have feelings of numbness, pain in the chest, sinus congestion. But what can we do with grief? In Asian medicine, grief is said to especially affect our lungs and our large intestines. And when we can express grief, that is one step to healing. So crying, writing the story, are all things we can do to help relieve grief. In my personal life, I found soaking in the bathtub with some essential oils to be very helpful. A few drops of lavender oil and just sobbing and sobbing, and then let the water out and visualize your grief going down the drain, being healed and comforted by the Earth Mother. There are herbs that have traditionally been used to help people cope with grief. Things like violets, violet leaves, violet flowers, you know, pansies, which are the cultivated cousin to violets, are also known as heart's ease. There's an herb called motherwort, which is said to mellow the sharpness of grief. We can also look to foods that help support us during times of grief. Things like winter squash, sweet potatoes, kale, a dandelion green salad, collards. Taking care of our lungs is really important because when we're really grieved, our lungs can be more vulnerable. There are also some supplements that can help. 5-HTP, which is a precursor to tryptophan, helps the body make its own serotonin. GABA, or gamma-aminobutyric acid, is another remedy that might be worth a try, and the amino acid tyrosine can help increase dopamine levels. St. John's wort is an herb that could be used as a tea, and a very powerful homeopathic remedy is Ignatia, for grief from loss. These are little white pellets that you can get at a natural food store. In any case, it's so kind that nature does provide things to help give us comfort during trying times. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.